Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we are on the air. Bet you didn't think you'd hear these voices today.
Let's go. Not in that third inning for the Nats.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. It's 4:30. We are with you for all of 2 hours. We will get our money's worth. Pack a punch today. Over these next 120 minutes, we will take you up to 6:30. We've got our fantasy series at 5. We're doing it all week long, different position group every single day. If you're not into fantasy football, don't worry. It's just a good little conversation on how some of the stars in the sport are going to play this season. And we'll get ready for college football. Massive weekend, one of the biggest games of the year, noon on Saturday. Danny Cannell will be joining the show. That's coming up in 90 minutes right at 6 o'clock here on The Fan. Danny, how was your afternoon?
Fantastic, my friend. First of all, sorry. Sorry about that teaser trailer for the fall that we had today. Now, I know, it's false fall. It's the D.C. area. It's going to get back to 114 degrees again and feel like soup. I know that, but this is just the reminder. It's almost time. You in-shape Instagram people, you 4% body fat people, you people that, I just can't believe summer's over. Believe it. It's coming. Our time is almost here. It's the time for the soft bodies. Fall. It's on its way.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Can't do it a whole lot better than the weather today. There's a lot going on. Plenty to talk about. Let's get right after it here on Grant and Danny. We'll start with the Commanders forming their practice squad. We now know what it looks like, and this is going to be an evolving group of players.
Yeah, it's
all
in progress.
This is not going to stay the same, but here's some of your notables. Sam Hartman's back in the building. Rough preseason. They like him in the QB room. He's obviously very close, good buddies with Jaden Daniels. So he is the fourth quarterback in the organization. For right now, Josh Johnson is on the 53-man roster. At 39 years old, he'll be the third quarterback. I'm still curious to see if he makes it to week one as the third QB or if they end up going outside the org and making a shift. But I will say, they did not claim anybody. Very different than they didn't try to claim anybody. We have no idea if they put in waiver wire claims.
That's the cost you pay for being, what's the word, good.
Yeah, they were right? 29th out of 32 teams in the waiver wire order. So in the reverse order, just like in your fantasy leagues, from the team that picked first in the draft, the Tennessee Titans, to the team that hoists the Lombardi Trophy, the Philadelphia Eagles, 1 through 32, Danny, in the National Football League. In order, you get to claim players. And Washington at 29 didn't successfully claim anybody. So they didn't add anybody to the roster just yet, so any movement is going to happen starting today. But Sam Hartman's back on the practice squad. I don't think that's a surprise. You generally want a project young guy on your P squad, and they seem to like Hartman in the building.
Yeah, to me, that's more about camaraderie than play. I mean, I'm not trying to be dismissive, but we all saw it. This is not someone that you'd want in a football game that matters. But what it sounds like behind the scenes, and people can roll their eyes at it, is he gets along really well with everybody, probably knows the ins and outs extremely well, and you know is the guy that cracks the joke at the right time, is a great team guy, is a supporting buttress for the kind of the grown-ups there in the room, the guys that are going to have to make all the plays, named Jaden Daniels or maybe Mariota. You know, God forbid something happens, but that's why he's around maybe more so than the actual football play.
I would also imagine that they feel like there is an upside to him as a backup quarterback eventually, too. Like, it can't be 100% that they just think he's a good hang. You would find another guy that's a good hang who could play on your practice squad. My guess is they don't think he's as bad as right now everybody in town thinks that he is. And to that point, he had a better preseason last year than he had this year.
100%
I think that was kind of a sum of all fears situation with Sam Hartman really struggling with a 4-interception August here. But he is back on the P squad. He'll stay in the organization. The wide receiver position is loaded on the practice squad. And we were wondering, would they keep a sixth wide out? And they didn't. Ja'Cory Brooks, the undrafted free agent from Louisville. Jacoby Jones, who showed some talent as well, a young guy at camp. And then of all the veterans, the one guy that did actually come back to the practice squad was Chris Moore, who had their best training camp, dropped a bunch of passes in the preseason, but he's played in the National Football League. He's caught passes in the league over a lengthy career. So they're going to have options there if they want to elevate somebody before a game day to have a sixth receiver on the roster. And I still think they may add another wideout to the 53-man from outside the building before it's all said and done. But notably there, Ja'Cory Brooks, interesting player, big, provides size, and was a sure catcher in preseason games. He'll be someone to monitor moving forward.
Yeah, there's something intriguing there for sure. And again, the fact that you're able to get him and others, which I'll go over here in a second, to the practice squad tells you that if a need arises, you can activate the guy. So see three guys last year that played significant snaps for this team that are not on the active roster. Sheldon Day, Michael Dieter, and Jalen Holmes. All were part of rotations. Dieter, of course, filled in for Biadasz and played, you know, almost 20%. Sheldon Day was part of a rotation, played 25% of snaps on a defensive line last year that we know where the struggles were. And I think Jalen Holmes was around 15%. But still, these guys played on this team last year, significant snaps, not just that one time when Bobby Wagner's, you know, helmet was malfunctioning or something. This is like they were on the football field. They are not now part of this active roster, but you can call them up on game days if, you know, somebody's inactive or someone's down. That's an advantage, right? To have guys in the building that know it, that were part of this thing, but also kind of tells you maybe they, you know, the tide has risen a little bit in terms of the active roster. At least that's the design anyway.
Well, there's your proof that that's happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's evidence. That's all you need to know, that this roster's deeper than last year. When you fast forward 1 year and guys that made the team and played extensively can't make this team. In fact, Adam Peters was asked about the talent on the roster when he spoke to the media at the start of training camp. The last time he talked before today, and him and Dan Quinn within the last hour actually sat down and addressed the media post the Terry McLaurin news that he's got a new contract. But Peters, when he first spoke, was asked a month ago, how would you compare this year's roster to last year's? And he said he thought they were better at almost every position, and he thought substantially this was a more talented team. And, of course, that's what he's going to say. But I would say when you cut players like a Cleveland Farrell that's going to have interest around the league, and when you are not able to keep players on your 53-man roster that played a lot down the stretch the previous season, that's a really, really good sign. Doesn't mean you're going to win more football games. When you play a tougher schedule, more arduous quarterback schedule, you're playing the two divisions in the league as an NFC East club that had three teams make the playoffs last year in the AFC West and the NFC North. So a win projection isn't really relevant to this, but you're more talented than you were last year, and I think their cutdown day proves that.
Yeah, on paper, certainly. Again, the proof will be in the pudding. They could also be wrong on players. They could also, you know, not have guys that they paid a bunch of money to or drafted live up to the billing. But yeah, on paper, certainly, given what happened last year, as you said, cut guys that played for them, move guys that played for them significantly to the practice squad, it certainly does look like an upgrade.
We had been waiting for almost two full days for the terms to come out on Terry McLaurin's contract, originally celebrated as a three-year deal worth right around $96 million. What did we find out today, and what does it mean about Terry McLaurin's long-term future in D.C. and the commitment that Adam Peters and Washington made to its wide receiver one? We're going to get into that as soon as we return. With you until 6:30, Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, welcome back. Thank you for making this show part of your day. We'll take you up to 6:30. At 5 o'clock in a little over 15 minutes, Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Fantasy Sports stops by. We'll talk to him about the wide receiver position as we get you ready for your drafts. And at 6 o'clock this evening, Danny Cannell on college football got a huge slate this weekend, including one of the best games of the year, a couple of top three teams locking horns. So we'll get to that all coming up on Grant and Danny as we go today. But the terms came out on the Terry McLaurin contract. We had been waiting very, very patiently for these, and this is what we now know, Danny. Effectively, the three-year $96 million, which we knew was fluffed up a bit and wasn't exactly what this is going to end up being, is a fancy way of saying, when you really strip everything down, Terry McLaurin signed a one-year extension. Reworked this deal for this year, this season. So he's under contract in 25 already, and now he's got a different amount of money he's going to be paid this year. But then they added 1 year, 2026 next season, with guarantees. And after that, there is no guaranteed money. So here's the good news for the player and the agent, right? Terry McLaurin got a decent contract. $29 million APY, average per year, makes him top 10 in the National Football League. $44 million in guaranteed money, tied with Chris Godwin, top 10 in the National Football League. When you consider his age, he actually did pretty well. This is not much of a precedent for a guy at that position that's about to be 30 to get that kind of money. So good for Terry McLaurin. I'm thrilled for him. He's earned every single penny. I wanted him to be taken care of. He is the lieutenant commander. He's the guy that everybody has fallen in love with in this fan base over the years. Set that aside for a second. In terms of the game of chicken and the stare down, Brandon Sosna, who negotiated this deal for the Commanders, and the general manager Adam Peters, who's dug his heels in, completely crushed in this stare down. When you actually look at the numbers and you see that McLaurin has zero guaranteed money after 2026, it means if the team wants to get out of the contract after the 26 season, they can do that. They could only have to pay a $6 million penalty to cut him post June 1st going into 2027. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think
McLaurin. But they could.
Exactly. Terry McLaurin's probably going to go out. He's going to be good. He's going to be productive. And they're going to want to keep him around. And by the way, if he keeps performing, if he's catching 70 plus balls for 1050 and 6-7 touchdowns, he'll be here year after year after year. But this is basically a 1-year contract extension tacked on to a raise this season for McLaurin. $44 million in guaranteed is an important number here, but instead of 4 years at $120 or so million, really what this is a 2-year deal for a little under $50 million for Terry McLaurin, and the team has the flexibility to move on if they want to after just 2 seasons. This is pretty amazing.
So it leads to a lot of questions, and you wonder, when could this have been signed? And for both parties, you know what I mean? Not blaming anybody in particular. Could this have been done 2 months ago, 3 months ago? Could this have been done, you know, at any point during the timeline where it seems pretty favorable to the team as far as I can read that, right? So was this just much ado about very little? Was it much, like, how much better did McLaurin and his agent do with this entire saga? I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe the guarantees came up several mil, and the APY went from what they were originally, we told, looking at around 25 mil, and it got to 29 mil.
Totally. And it was also one of them from the team's perspective. This is all it took. Why didn't you do this earlier? I mean, again, the questions are things that we'll probably never really have a feel for or know. But I will say, just again, with this data point, the number that the agent, Buddy Baker, gets to put up there is, if you go to SpotTrac and you sort by average salary of AAV of receivers, there's Terry McLaurin right behind Garrett Wilson, right behind DK Metcalf, ahead of AJ Brown. That's what he gets to tout, and that's what was the 3 and 96. That's what that was all about. Any digging tells you that's fantasy land, that's fictional. It's not that. It's more kind of what you're talking about. The nuts and bolts of it, the team doesn't have to take a victory lap. They got the contract that they want. So
Correct. Their
victory lap will be, we don't owe you diddly or squat, and we have a tiny dead cap hit if we feel like moving on.
By the way, they handled it beautifully. They got a good contract. Here's what I mean by this. They handled the post-agreement part of this beautifully. You let the agent throw out the big numbers. Everybody reacts and says, oh my gosh, the team caved. Terry got paid, you know, all of these things. And you don't have to say a word. You're allowed to just be classy and high road this thing. Quite literally, let the agent have his day. I reached out to somebody with the team at one point, and I'm like, hey, what's the guaranteed money? Like, what's the deal here? Just trying to figure out the actual side of this that the team would put out there. And they said, oh, we're just, you know, we're sitting back here. This, you know, talk to the agent, the player, like, this is their day kind of thing. Very classy. It's a nice way to do it. But the numbers come out because we got them, and it's very obvious here that it's basically a 2-year deal for Terry McLaurin at this point. Now, all that most fans care about, understandably, is that the extension is done, that he'll be on the field against the Giants, and that if he performs, there's a bunch of incentives in this over many years to come, that he can continue to force their hand to keep him on the roster and maybe rework another deal into his mid-30s if he really bucks the trend of wide receiver performance at his age. But from a strictly negotiation standpoint, Sosna, who handles it for the team, and Peters were clinical. Now, I still think there's a conversation to be had. There's a debate to be had over, did it have to be this way?
Should you have been?
Yeah. Should they have done it this way? Like, okay, you guys didn't necessarily take care of him in some loud way over many years, could you have? Would it have been that different, right? But if the point is just figuring out the contract, which we now have, and then working back from that, they couldn't have gotten a more team-friendly contract with a player that means as much to them as a wide receiver one. Mm-hmm. And the last point I'll make is, I think 2027 is really significant here. Because there's no guaranteed money starting in 27, which would be the third football season from now, I think it tells you a lot about their plans with Jaden Daniels and the rest of the roster. If you look at their 2027 roster, mm-hmm. Javon Kinlaw, under contract with some guaranteed money, and Sam Cosmi, who was also extended recently, under contract with some guaranteed money. Other than that, I think John Bates, final year of a $7 million per year deal. It's just rookie contracts. There's nobody that they're allocating cash to that far down the road. And by getting McLaurin's guarantees off the books by then as well, I think it tells you that that's when the Jaden extension is going to kick in. That first offseason, as soon as they're able to, you'll rip up the rest of Daniel's deal. You're not going to worry about the fifth-year extension, and you will do the Justin Herbert, Josh Allen thing, where the second you can, you give him, I mean, my God, at that point, $300 million or whatever that looks like.
Yeah, 75, 80 a year, something like that.
And that excites me, that they it seemingly are planning for having their books wide open in 2027 to immediately start the Daniels extension. Because we've been saying, well, if you pay McLaurin more money and you guarantee him more money and it goes into 27 or even 28 with a little bit of money, who cares? That the Daniels money doesn't have to kick in then yet because you can go to the end of the five-year deal with the extension. But what if you tear the last couple of years of that up as soon as you're allowed to renegotiate after three and pay him then? That's good business. Ask Jerry Jones. The faster you do this, especially in the quarterback market, every time a guy gets paid, it resets and gets bigger and bigger and bigger, the better. And I think this was a window into what they're thinking.
Yeah, so you can increase that fourth year or that fifth year from what you normally would get and then maybe pay a little bit less as you go, just in terms of the total money, whatever. I mean, think about buying out arbitration years for young players, or aka what the Braves do. Every time they have a young prospect that comes up, they somehow sign him to like a 10-year deal for a third of market value just because you're getting the guy richer a little bit quicker in those early years. But yeah, I mean, as you look ahead, I mean, I think that discussion is a great sports discussion. Just going back to your first point about, should they have done this? Was this the right thing to do? For folks that, you know, you're rooting for the jersey, you're rooting for the team, long after this group of players is gone, 10 years from now, you'll be rooting for a totally new crop. You go, well, yeah, that makes perfect sense, because you're going to have to, if Terry's 100% the commander tag, Luvu's like 84%, so you got to pay him a little bit more. You got to pay Sanders a little bit more. You probably have to pay Tunsil a premium because he plays at a premium spot. And if this guy, and then you don't want to set that precedent. The other side of that is, and this is a point you've made very well, I would say, over these several months and months and months and months that we've been doing this, is you don't have to break glass for anybody else. You do it for this guy because of what he's been through and what he means and you know how right he is. So who knows where the truth lies. And I think that's going to be fun for folks that want to have that conversation. But it is interesting and it is instructive to sort of see how they do this, right? Where Adam Peters mentioned this at his press conference. Hopefully we're doing a lot of these, because what that means, not having prolonged negotiations that govern everybody's news cycle for 24/7 for 7 months, but it means you've got good players that you want to keep. That's the idea. True. And we've got their blueprint now.
I think for me, I have two takeaways. The first is, if you're Sosna who negotiated this thing or you're Peters who held firm, again, you could not have done anything more team friendly or favorable. And I think just strictly financially, they crushed it, right? But the second part is still relevant and is still an interesting talking point, which is, I heard from one prominent NFL agent today who said both, essentially, the team pummeled the agent, to paraphrase, but then also, you know, and we know why. It's not like Buddy Baker was just incompetent. There was no leverage on the player side. There was tons of leverage on the team side. We had that all along. We get that. But the other thing that this agent said was, I think there's going to be a lot of agents and players around the league that look at this and wonder, wow, if this is what Terry McLaurin got from them after the year he had last year, are they going to take care of anybody in a big, substantial way, or is it just going to be business and by the numbers? Because this is fairly business by the numbers math here. This is not a Terry's our guy, we love him, so we're going to keep him around here forever. They gave him more money this year, $44 million guaranteed. He and his new wife are going to be just fine. They did very well at his age. But they did a deal to be able to get out of this thing in a couple of years. And if that's what they want to do and he's not performing, that's what they'll be able to do. And frankly, the fact that there's no guaranteed money after next football season is shocking to me. Grant and Danny on The Fan, our fantasy series at 5 all week long. We'll talk wide receivers. Speaking of Terry McLaurin, we'll do that next.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Everything's coming together at the practice facility for the Commanders today. Terry McLaurin is practicing. It's happening.
That's right. Here we go.
And Noah Brown is on the practice field as well. So Jaden Daniels getting his weapons back just in time for the start of the season. The show is brought to you exclusively by the law firm Cundori & Murad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a consultation for free today with them. Visit kmlawyers.com and mention us. They'll give you a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We've been talking Terry McLaurin. We just told you Noah Brown's back at practice. Let's stick with the wide receiver theme and go around the NFL as we get you ready for your fantasy drafts this week. And to help us, we'll go to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and talk to a guy you and I both get a lot of insight from throughout the season as Yahoo Fantasy guys. Yahoo Sports fantasy writer Scott Pianowski is with us on GND. Scott, thank you for hopping aboard. How are you?
For having me, and no better time than to discuss fantasy football. It is the biggest draft weekend coming, the long holiday weekend, so I'm sure a lot of people are boning up for their leagues. Let's give them some help.
We actually have two drafts coming up for me, and I think two for Danny in the next couple days. We've got our Listener League fantasy draft at a pizza spot in town tonight with a bunch of our listeners, so this is a very well-timed segment, very well-timed interview. I actually want to start with Terry McLaurin locally for the Commanders. How much of a fantasy value ding do you give him for the lack of an offseason? Do you anticipate either a pitch count or a slow start to begin the year?
Yeah, maybe a slow onboarding, but yeah, I've always loved McLaurin's professionalism since he turned pro. And you guys know more than anybody, all we ever wanted was just to see him play with a plus quarterback, and he finally finds it with Jaden Daniels. He would have liked the contract stuff to get resolved sooner. So be realistic with what you expect from McLaurin maybe for the first 2 or 3 weeks, although that theme kind of goes through the NFL, right? So many teams don't use their starters or their primary guys or their primary plays in the preseason. So week one and week two often become glorified exhibition weeks because the shape of the summer has changed. I still have McLaurin slotted right now, I think wide receiver 13 or 14, so a very high-end wide receiver too, somebody I would probably look for around the fourth round.
Scott, give me the wide receivers, standard PPR format, that you think are first-round worthy draft selections.
A bunch of them. I have seven you could consider. Jamar Chase, probably the one in most leagues, so I don't need to sell anybody on him. CeeDee Lamb's my number two receiver. I think Dallas junks the running game early this season. Let's Dak cook, and that means Lamb's going to catch 100 balls. Justin Jefferson tied to the quarterback whisperer. Kevin O'Connell will eventually get J.J. McCarthy going, although that might be a slow onboard too. They don't have Addison right away, and you don't want to overexpose McCarthy, but we've just seen O'Connell do it with every quarterback he's had. So I don't have any problem with Justin Jefferson. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the sun god in Detroit. I know they lost Ragnow, their center. I know they lost Ben Johnson, their very well-regarded coordinator. He's in Chicago now. But when you have a veteran quarterback, he's basically part of the offensive coordinator infrastructure too. And St. Brown, just a very safe 100, 105, 110 catches. I would take him in the first round. Nico Collins, my number five receiver. Houston running game could be a problem. Mixon won't be ready to go. Offensive line was bad. And then they traded their best lineman in Laremy Tunsil. I think Nico Collins might get 170 targets. C.J. Stroud's better than he played last season. Collins belongs in the first round. And then Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and I've flip-flopped them back and forth. Right now I have Thomas 6 and Nabers 7, probably first rounders. I know some people are a little bit nervous about Thomas because they obviously drafted Hunter, won the Biletnikoff, he won the Heisman, he won all the trophies last year. He'll play a little bit of defense, but Liam Cohen comes in. He's a coach we respect, much like Ben Johnson. He's somebody we're excited about. He got Baker Mayfield the 41 touchdowns last year. So we don't know if Trevor Lawrence will ever become a star, but if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. So I think Thomas, who was terrific last year despite bad play around him, belongs in the first round. You can say the same thing about Neighbors, right? That quarterback room was not good last year. It should be better. Russell Wilson is still quasi-competent. At some point, Jackson Dart will play. And Neighbors is one of those guys. When receivers, you draft them early, you want them targeted off the bus. And all Brian Daboll does every day until he goes to sleep is scheme ways to get Malik Neighbors the football. So 160, 165, 170 targets might be in play. So I would be comfortable taking any of those guys in the first round. There's seven to choose from.
Scott Pianowski is with us of Yahoo Fantasy Sports on Grant and Danny. Let's go back to Ja'Marr Chase at the top of the board.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking a lot on the show about Saquon Barkley this week and this idea of the history that states when you have the type of workload he had last year that you just don't play in more than 10 to 12 games the following season. What do we know historically about receivers that go bonkers? Like Chase going 125 catches, 1,700 yards, 17 touchdowns. I know it's prime of his career. He's 25 years old, all that stuff. But if I'm taking him number one overall, can I pencil that back in?
The thing with Chase, this is the way I feel about any high pick in any fantasy league. I would say this for fantasy baseball. I would say fantasy football. I'd say for any fantasy sport you play. All you want if you draft Chase, I know you want him to smash the league and have all those leading stats, you know, 127, 1,708, and 17. He led the league in all three categories. It's unrealistic to expect that. But what did he do the previous season? 100 catches, 1,216 yards. Burrow missed time that season. He's tied to an elite quarterback in Burrow. Heisman Trophy winner, MVP candidate. Cincinnati defense is really bad. The passing game is extremely concentrated in Cincinnati. They only really throw the ball to a couple of guys. So that's good. 175 targets last year, age 25 season. So Chase presumably in his prime. And although we didn't see this play out last year where the running backs, other than McCaffrey, for the most part, were incredibly healthy and they ran pure. You know, Barkley, one of those guys you mentioned, but typically that's an injury position more than a receiver is. They get tackled by the heavier guys on the defense. I do realize there's a shift in the NFL where the defenses are getting lighter. They're more worried about pass defense. That's why the running game has made somewhat of a renaissance. But when I draft Chase, if you told me he's one of the top four receivers in fantasy, I'd be fine with it. Yeah, Lamb could beat him, or Jefferson could beat him, or, I mean, who knows? Maybe Drake London, who I think is an early second-round pick. Maybe he'll have a huge season. He was terrific last year when Michael Penix took over. I remember him in that Washington overtime game. But I just want my first pick to be a foundation. So right now, I would sign up for 105 catches, 1,500 yards, 12 touchdowns. I would take that, even though those would all be come down from what he did last season. I also want to mention with the Barkley thing, 482 touches last year, including the playoffs. Didn't have a touchdown from the one-yard line. That's Jalen Hurts territory. Barkley averaged 29.4 yards per touchdown, an unsustainable rate. I know he's a great player, but I want to be young at that position. I'm taking Bijan Robinson, and I'm probably taking Jahmyr Gibbs over Barkley. And I know that might sound a little bit crazy after the season Barkley had, but that's a position where I really think it's important to have guys on the upswing, guys who are still on the front nine. As great as Barkley is, he's, you know, smack dab in the middle of his career, or maybe even starting that back nine, makes me a little bit nervous.
Scott Pianowski, Yahoo Sports, getting us ready for your fantasy drafts, talking receivers here on G&D. So if you don't end up with one of the stars in that first round, just kind of the way it falls, thinking Chase, Lamb, you know, maybe Jefferson, and maybe Amon-Ra St. Brown, et cetera. How are you approaching receiver in your drafts? Are you going, you know, maybe premium position, maybe end of round one, round two, in a Bowers? Are you looking running back? Like, if I guess I'm asking kind of twofold. One, how have your drafts kind of shaken out in terms of receiver? And two, where do you think the great value is for folks that may miss out on one of the stars in round one?
So the big thing, the big fork in the road for your listeners is how many receivers do you start? If you start two, or if you start three, it's a major difference in your roster building. If you only start two, I think you need two running backs in the first three or four rounds because there's just enough good receivers that everybody's going to be pretty good, even if you have a flex position that might add that third receiver. If you have to start at least three receivers, I think it's imperative that you have the best receiver room in your league, because one thing about fantasy football is that running backs, once they inherit opportunity, they can become fantasy factors. any starting running back gets hurt somewhere, gets traded. You've obviously seen a lot of upheaval this summer, and the Washington backfield's a little bit complicated right now. That's going to mint somebody for fantasy goodness. Now, if Tyreek Hill decides he'd walk to earth, doesn't want to play football anymore, that doesn't mean the next man up in Miami is a star. It doesn't work that way, you know? We've seen Kansas City have injuries in their receiver room and have trouble replacing them. So, yes, a couple of years ago, Puka Nacua came out of nowhere. He went bananas in week one, and he was a waiver wire gold. But for the most part, the receivers you're going to pick up off waivers are going to be depth guys, bye week guys, your wide receiver five, your wide receiver six. You're not going to get the wide receivers who start themselves. So if you start three or more, I would probably, first four picks, probably have a running back and three receivers. If the right running backs fell, maybe two and two, and then my fifth round pick would be a receiver. And there's some really good guys in every round. I mentioned seven guys I thought were first round valuable. Second round, Drake London looks great. Ladd McConkey was a 1,600-yard pace guy for the second half of the season. Even with Allen back, I'm not worried about him. T. Higgins tied to that Cincinnati infrastructure. I'm not as thrilled with Puka Nacua because he doesn't score touchdowns, and they added Davante Adams, who's been put on this earth to score touchdowns, and Matthew Stafford, age 37, back problem. Makes me a little bit concerned. But then we get to the third round, Mike Evans. I mentioned McLaurin maybe as a fourth-round pick, but he may actually be back in the third round now that he's signed and happy and tied to Daniels. Marvin Harrison, you could consider a fourth round, fifth round, guys like Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, the more of the boring veterans that I think are great wide receiver threes. Cortland Sutton is very underrated with the Broncos. Zay Flowers is always open in Baltimore, a little bit like Jameson Williams. We haven't seen him completely go crazy yet. There's a lot of competition for the ball in Baltimore, but I still think he's a value pick. If George Pickens can accept being the number two in Dallas, he'd be a great wide receiver three. Jameson Williams can score on any play on the field. Xavier Worthy is that type of guy in Kansas City, a boring value in Calvin Ridley, Tennessee. And just one more guy, I realize I'm listening half the league right now. I would have told you a month ago, Juwan Jennings was my guy in San Francisco, but he's had a calf injury. He's unhappy about his contract. I think Ricky Pearsall will have to get there. Last year, the fact that he did anything after being shot, he actually got some reps in his rookie year. Ayuk's hurt. Obviously, Deebo Samuel's in Washington now. I think Ricky Pearsall has a chance to be a breakout player and a key guy to get in your fantasy draft, probably as your third receiver.
Scott, information is very helpful. Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
It. There you go, your wide receiver preview, Scott Pianowski of Yahoo. We've been doing a different position every single day, so tomorrow we'll get into tight ends right here at 5 o'clock on Grant and Danny. We've got our big draft tonight. In fact, I've got two drafts tonight. Got the fantasy draft with listeners and Danny and our producers at Pupatella Pizza in Springfield. And if you want to come hang with us tonight, even if you're not in the league, you can come out and watch us do the draft, kick it with us. And then later tonight, I got a friend's draft that I'm doing. Probably have to sit there on the computer before I leave.
Tis the season. It's with cringe that I send those calendar invites to my wife. Not that she's participating, but just to let you know that I won't be. Like, I'm not helpful.
Definitely the nerdiest thing. Well, Now I'm gonna sound mean. I was gonna say definitely the nerdiest thing we do, but it's not the nerdiest thing you do.
I've got nerdier stuff. Yeah, thank
you. But to tell my wife like I'm not gonna be home because I'm hanging out. Like, just think about from her perspective.
Right.
Of guys are gonna fake draft football players and fake manage teams.
Yeah. I'm doing sports D&D. You know what I mean? Like I'm gonna manage a pretend football team that doesn't exist anywhere except for my login.
I don't think I've ever thought about how embarrassing. It kind of is from the outside if you're not into football at all, because I'm obsessed with it and I love it and I do it all the time. But there was a great scene in This Is 40, I think it was. It was one of these movies with Paul Rudd where he was like sneaking out to do his fantasy draft.
Fantasy baseball draft.
And they were all like yelling out their players in an auction draft. And I think his wife thought he was cheating or something and she walked in the room. And she was basically more mad at that because he was sitting there with these other people and she thought it was the nerdiest thing in the world and she lied to him about it. And she's like, what is going on here, man? Like, I actually thought you were with a woman. I didn't know you were just with a bunch of dudes talking about some second baseman from the Yankees.
Yeah.
But it was the best.
It was the most iconic scene
from
the whole
movie. If fantasy sports is not your nerdiest thing, like, what's the thing when your wife calls you on it that's like, oof, you're right. That's
right. Yeah, I can't defend it. Video games, certainly. Like, you know, late hours into the night about games where there's like Gil and I need like a bard. And, you know, sort of magic usage and mana. I mean, those sorts of things are just my wheelhouse.
I don't know what any of those words mean.
Of course you do. You're a big fantasy guy. You know all about it. So that's up there. The books I used to be able to read, like I have given up reading basically since all these children are around all the time.
Like the elf languages and stuff?
Yeah, about that kind of stuff.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Book of Lost Tales from Tolkien or Game of Thrones stuff. And by the way, George R.R.R. Martin, whenever you get a chance, just finish those books up real quick. Waiting on you.
The Commanders are the oldest team in the NFL, and it is not close. Is that a problem? I want to get into their age and the perspective, not just for this year of them being the oldest, but how long it's been since there was a team close to them in age. I mean, hint, hint, it has been a while. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny on the Fan, thanks to Toby for the update. The most important thing that's going to happen today in sports, this YouTube agreement with Fox, a short-term extension to avoid service disruption ahead of college football Saturday with the game that everybody's been waiting all offseason for, Texas and Ohio State. So if you've got YouTube TV like me, And millions of other people, you will now get your Saturday college football dose. You will get your Commanders football on Sundays. Do we know how long the short-term agreement is? Notified customers that they have until 27, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't say. Is it just through the weekend to get us to next week? Or is this going to be through the NFL season? We need more information. But if you're wondering about Saturday and you're worried about not getting to watch the most important game on the college slate, fear not. An agreement has been reached for the short term. By the way, speaking of college football, one of our favorite college analysts, Danny Cannell, going to be stopping by, Danny, in 30 minutes to preview the weekend ahead.
He is shot out of a cannon and awesome, and this is who I think of this time of year, right? I mean, A, so knowledgeable, B, has great opinions, and I always get smarter when I listen to Danny Canny talk about the foosballs.
Back to the Commanders we go. Couple of things we have not yet discussed today that are newsy and relevant about Washington. First, I'm sure you guys have seen this. Toby's mentioned this in his updates. So Rashee Rice, the wide receiver from the Kansas City Chiefs, is going to be suspended 6 games by the NFL. Got in trouble a couple different ways, a couple different times off the field in his career. Most notably, though, there was video of him leaving a crash at a very, very high rate of speed. Thank God nobody was seriously injured or died, but people were injured in the collision. And, you know, this is the league's chance to do what needs to be done. I mean, he was charged with a crime he was found guilty of. I think he even pled guilty to a crime. He's going to have to serve some time in jail in the offseason. But they're suspending him for 6 games, which means he will be back and probably back up to speed by week 8, Monday Night Football, Kansas City and Washington. The rumor last week was that the NFL wanted to suspend him 10 games. He would have missed the Commanders game. Now, with a 6-game suspension levied, he'll be back for that game. This is the number one wide receiver for the Chiefs. Last year, he hurt his ACL and was out after 4 contests. But in the first 3 games of the season, the offense went through him.
Mm-hmm.
He went for 103, 75, and 110 receiving yards in the first 3 games last year as Patrick Mahomes' favorite target. So it's just a much better offense for the Chiefs when he's out there. Go back to his rookie year. He was an 80-catch, 938-yard, 7-touchdown guy.
And he really started to come on as the year was going along,
like
too. Yeah,
Terry McLaurin-esque, frankly, in the second half of the season,
yep,
the kind of production we see here from him. But he's now going to play against Washington, it sounds like, barring any kind of injury between now and then.
Yeah, they'll tread water, and they'll have him for the time that you want him. The second half, down the stretch, you know, into the playoffs, because I bet you Kansas City makes it, just kind of looking at the recent history. But, you know, it goes with an interesting room, right, where you're talking Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown, kind of the very, very poor man's version of Tyreek Hill, the deep threat. I mean, he's there to run vertical routes, but, you know, where their bread is buttered, it's going to be interesting. Maybe it's a little more ground and pound. Pacheco, Kareem Hunt, we're still doing that dance, but, you know, if Travis Kelce's a bit more spry, but they're still a defense and let's let Mahomes make some magic team for a while. With Rashee Rice, maybe that's a bit more dynamic. Maybe you've got some answers. Maybe you can win one of those shootouts come postseason time.
I know that the roster doesn't really seem to matter. This is very old-school Patriots-esque, where you look at the skill groups or just the overall talent, and you don't really see how they're going to get to 13 or 14 wins again, why it is that they're this unbeatable team, this daunting task, this insurmountable force, basically. But with now a suspension for 6 games until he's back, again on paper, this Chiefs offense looks like it's going to be sluggish. I don't know how they are prolific. I don't know why they would be dynamic. Travis Kelce, he's the tight end, by the way, that just got engaged to Taylor Swift yesterday. I don't know if you guys heard about this.
I did not see anything on that.
But Kelce, based on last season, I'm comfortable saying, is no longer at the peak of his powers and his best football is behind him. I think he's a good player, so at tight end.
Still a useful player, yeah.
Noah Gray, Jared Wiley, that's a really good tight end room, and Kelce can still go out and catch 65, 70 balls probably. But you know they're going to be keeping him fresh for the stretch run as well, so you're not going to go max effort early in the season with him. Hollywood Brown gets hurt all the time. Xavier Worthy's electric. You talked about his skills. But it feels to me, again, like they're going to need the missed field goal at the end of the game. The Chiefs voodoo.
The block field goal at the end of the game.
They're going to need the defensive first win or the run game with Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt to be awesome. I just don't see how Mahomes is going to go out and put up 4,500 yards, 45 touchdowns, be back in the MVP mix, which a lot of people were saying might happen this year after this suspension.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And by the way, that's okay. Their schedule up front, by the way. How about this? Divisional game, Chargers to start. Eagles, Giants, whatever. But Ravens, the first 4 weeks, 3 out of those 4 games are pretty challenging. This is, this. You said Patriots.
They play the Baltimore game in week four?
In week four.
Oh, what a break for the Ravens to get them without Rice.
Well, this reminds me, as you said, that the Patriots is the perfect comp, where if you were going to get, we're going to do the stories on the shouty shows, what's wrong with the Chiefs as they're starting 2-2 or whatever, and you'll get a relaxed type moment where I bet you it's going to work out. I bet you in the second half of the season when they get to play, you know, the Titans, the Raiders, a couple other teams down the stretch, you look up and you go, how did they end up at 12 wins when they started the way they did? They're inevitable. They're Thanos.
But they are one of those teams, I think, that based on the fact that they kind of accidentally won as many games as they did last year, they're a lock to regress. In other words, they were 15-2.
Yep.
So everybody knows they're not going 15-2 again. But I could see them going 11-6 and a team like Denver actually pushing them. Now, the Broncos might have to take both games from them in the West to actually get to 11-6. But if you do that and you have a tiebreaker, for the first time in nearly a decade, we could see another champion in the AFC West. I'm not predicting it, but it is inevitably going to happen at some point, and I don't know why this year wouldn't be a possibility if Denver's as good as I think they might be. By the way, when are those Broncos games? Because that would be really interesting. If they play them twice in December, I like it a lot less. But if the Broncos get them before Rice comes back for the first time, you know, maybe that's an opportunity to jump on them in the first of the two matchups.
Denver is, after their bye week, Andy Reid bye week, et cetera, and so forth. November 16th in week 11, and then in week 17 on Christmas Day.
Not ideal. So they'll have Rice for both games, and they're playing Andy Reid, who I don't remember the exact stat now, but I know at one point he was like 24-3 after a, you know, in-season bye week, basically. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best all-time at it. So that doesn't bode well for the Broncos. Are you as high on Denver as everybody else? I think they're going to have one of the best defenses in the league. And it's Sean Payton and a scheme-fitted quarterback on offense.
So on paper, yes, I am. It's one of those things where now the train has left the station and everybody's, you know, this is the year, this is the team. It feels like a little bit premature, but all the ingredients are there, to your point. Bo Nix had it. If it wasn't for Jaden Daniels, we would be talking about how sensational Bo Nix is and was in year number one. In Sean Payton's system, that guy's got a pretty good track record about making some offense out of different pieces. Their defense is outstanding. He's a really good football coach. They're right there knocking on the door, especially with the injuries to the Chargers and how they look on paper, not as good. And the regression coming back to the pack you'd expect for Kansas City. Again, they've got that magic ingredient, but they weren't a 15-win team last year. That's not an insult. They were probably a 12.5 or 13-win team. That's still pretty damn good. But Denver could be that. It now just feels because like everybody's in, it makes you a little nervous.
All right, I want to get back to the Commanders and their team age because this was an interesting story that came out today. This guy, Jimmy Kemsky, who covers the league out of Philadelphia, writes about age every single season. He does these deep dives into the roster, does the average age breakdown, and gives you some nuggets on that. The Commanders are the oldest team in the NFL. We knew that coming into the preseason. They are, on average, 28.09 years old, basically 28.1 years old. Not just the oldest team in the NFL right now, but Danny, this guy Jimmy Kemsky's done this, dating back to 2012, where he crunches all the numbers for age per team, And the previous oldest two teams in the National Football League when he has done this were the 2018 Raiders and the 2023 Saints at 27.4 years old, meaning by over a half year, which does not sound like a big deal. But when these 32 teams...
When you're averaging 53, 54, yeah.
All these 32 teams are together and they're all within 0.4, 0.3, whatever. Like, it's a big, big difference. By a half year, the Commanders in the 13 seasons of this exercise are the oldest team that he has studied and crunched the numbers on. One more piece of evidence I want to give you about just how old they are. Players at least 29 years old, on the precipice, the most in the NFL by far. You know how many the Green Bay Packers have?
It's like three.
They have four players that are 29 years old or older. Four. Washington has 25. Now, this does not mean that the Commanders can't have a good season. But what it does mean, there is a correlation. It's been proven statistically, scientifically, I'm sure, in some way as well, that the older you are, A, the more likely to get hurt you become, but B, the longer an injury recovery may take. It just means that last year Bobby Wagner stayed healthy, or Zach Ertz stayed healthy, or some of the guys that they brought in that were older. It's not a guarantee that that happens again. We all hope that it does, but this is one of the nerve-wracking elements of this team. This is one of the monsters under the bed that none of us want to think about and none of us want to talk about, and we just hope that Jaden Daniels, you know, with his baseball bat, can come save us in the middle of the night if we hear creaking under the bed. But 29 players over 25, the oldest team in the league and the oldest team in 13 seasons of the NFL, at least, that's just the time that we have based on this guy doing this, is worrisome.
Now, there are a bunch of guys that will contribute that are hurting this average, and they're specialists. I don't care about Tressway's age. I don't care about Matt Gay's age. But for everybody that wants to dismiss it because of that, no, not so fast. There are 19 players among guys that will be regular contributors. You want to call them starters, want to call them rotation pieces, you know, like think defensive line or early season and Andrew Wiley or somebody like that, whether he ends up a starter or not for 16 weeks, 17 weeks. That's not what I'm talking about. Guys that are going to play. Doesn't count Josh Johnson, who's going to ruin any average because he's 39 years old. Doesn't count Nick Belor, who's 36. He's a special teams guy, even though I could include him. There are 19 players that will get significant snaps for this team that are 29 and older. Now, that's not ancient in real-world terms, but in a sport where the average career is 2.5 years, that is. Now, it could be nothing, but it's also noteworthy, right? I think you touched on it very well. We lived a charmed life when it came to Zach Ertz last year. This is a guy that could not have been more oft injured. You know, if he was purposely kicking his shin against a metal plank.
I wanted to see where you were going to go with that.
I didn't have a good analogy set up.
That was going to be a tough plane to land.
Didn't have a great thing set up there. I was like, he couldn't have been more hurt if he tried to be.
It was a bumpy landing, but no, you didn't crash.
Sorry, everybody, about the turbulence.
The pilot had to come over after and say, sorry about that, guys. We had some crosswinds there, but hopefully you get to your connection, and thanks for flying with us on Danny Ruya Airlines.
Didn't think about the end of the sentence before I started it, and kind of left myself in the lurch, but appreciate you flying the film. This guy's the way you have choices in air travel and on radio programs. We appreciate you choosing this one. Thanks for flying the film, this guy.
So, as you look at it, there are so many guys that you think Austin Eckler last year. That's not because he was 29 that he got concussed. Like, and again, I'm not being flippant about it. Like,
correct.
That could happen to a 21-year-old, et cetera. But the history, the data, as you look at, you know, some guys, again, that are key contributors, there's a reason they can do these non-cap-killing free agent deals for guys like Will Harris, for guys like Jonathan Jones, who's 32. You can do those sorts of things because you're not tied to them long-term. Well, the flip side is, the corollary is, there's no A ready replacement. There's no developing from within. I don't know why they inherited the barest cupboard of all. Watching Kyle Hamilton get his contract today just reminds you that they took Jahan Dotson after a trade. How'd that work out? All those guys, by the way, in that deal are gone. Chris Olave would have been good. So would have Kyle Hamilton and so on, right? But at least they got Jahan Dotson, I think made the Eagles roster. But you see the point. They're bare when it comes to that. I get it. But at the same time, this is the deal.
Looking this up here, I did not see that he got cut, so he should be on this roster. He is. Good for Jahan.
Good for Jahan Dotson.
Looks like he's still wide receiver 3.
Catch a tutty against Washington.
For John Mechie. So maybe he could push him a little bit. But by the way, the Eagles only have 5 wide receivers on their roster as well. They might be in the market to add a 6th at some point. They've got a decent little front line with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, so I don't know how much they're worried about their depth.
Yeah.
But that's a little something to monitor. All right, next, I want to get into the press conference today between the media with Dan Quinn and Adam Peters. So Quinn was asked about McLaurin's availability for Week 1. Not that if he's going to play or not, we know that. But is he going to be on a pitch count, or can he be himself completely? Does he have enough time to get all the way back to speed? So you'll hear what Dan Quinn said about that. And then Peters was asked if he was surprised by how long the dispute between Terry and the team dragged on. Really, really interesting there. We will get to that next. Grant and Danny on the Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We will take you up to 6:30. Danny Cannell on the college football slate, including one of the games of the year on Saturday. Coming up at 6, it's finally here. Football is back. Speaking of ball, out in Ashburn today, the head coach and GM of the Commanders, Dan Quinn and Adam Peters, met with the media first time since cutdown day. They addressed the roster decisions, the forming of the 53-man group, and Terry McLaurin's dispute finally ending with a new contract for the first time. This was Dan Quinn when he was asked about if Terry McLaurin's going to be ready to be himself in Week 1. Did he give himself enough time to get all the way back in time for the Giants?
Yeah, absolutely it is, and it's awesome. I love coaching him. He is a rare competitor, so he'll be out on the field today with his teammates, along with Noah Brown and some others that are on the way back. So that's an important time, John, even though it's not technically game week, just to get some reps together. It's a big deal for us, and, yeah, we're really pumped about it.
On the practice field today, answered at the beginning, absolutely. We'll see what the pitch count looks like. Does he play every single snap that he would have? I'm not sold that that's going to be the case. Also, in talking to Logan Paulson, our buddy who crunches all the tape and watches the All-22 so well, you know, he was saying that if he was Cliff Kingsbury, maybe he would consider just building a package for Terry and consolidating play quantity.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, maybe.
So what does that look like?
Well, the idea he had was, like, you give him 25 or 30 plays that he's going to be on the field for, and of those, you know, 6 to 8, maybe 10, whatever it is, could go his way, like super high, you know, share, perhaps. But the idea being that way he doesn't have to get the whole playbook, not down mentally, but, like, he doesn't have to get his feet under him for the entire game or the entire playbook. It's like, hey, when this is the package we think you could take advantage of, this is how you're going to be used. Like any kind of situationally used guy, if you're bringing in a second quarterback for this mobile thing you're trying out for a week, basically, we're going to give you 20, 35 plays, whatever that looks like. These are the plays you'll be on the field for. We're in this look, and we'll set it up on the first drive and come back to it in the second drive. Now, that was just his idea, but I think there's probably some hope, depending on the shape that they feel like Terry's in from a football standpoint, that when he gets out there and runs around starting today, maybe they'll be impressed, and maybe he is closer to being able to go out and run 68, 70 plays. The problem is best tempo in the NFL, most no-huddle plays in the league last year, so the way they play is not for everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, so I also, the alternative, I don't think Dan Quinn would come out and say, yeah, he's going to be on a pitch counter. Yeah, he's not really going to be ready. He'll be himself. He's, you know, it's time to pump up the player and make sure everybody knows that, you know, we're all brothers, we're all in this together, and we all got the commander tag, et cetera. So I still do expect a pitch count to
some
degree. Did
you say brothers?
Brotherhood, yeah.
Brotherhood Bell.
Yeah, Brotherhood Bell. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it. Logan's suggestion is a good one to me. I mean, you can't have too many obvious tells where, okay, McLaurin's in the game, it's probably going his way, so, you know, he'll have to run some routes, block a few different times, and, you know, maybe use him as a decoy here and there. But, yeah, I'd expect, you know, that 20-25 snap range.
Adam Peters spoke for the first time since this deal got done. He was asked if he was surprised by how long the dispute dragged on.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we didn't want it to go this long, but that wasn't super surprising, understanding, you know, that we had a little ways to go in terms of finding middle ground. But, you know, I think, you know, it took how long it took, you know. So as long as we got to where we got, you know, we're happy. And then, you know, you never want, you want to take their personal feelings out of everything. And, you know, luckily for us, we didn't have any ill personal feelings for Terry or Buddy or anybody in the whole negotiation. So that wasn't an issue. It was just, you know, maybe just your feelings about, you know, where you want to be at the end compared to where they want to be. But in terms of how all that went, you know, I know there were some tough times, you know, in terms of, you know, maybe some things stalled a little bit. But in the end, you always just, you know, understand, like, shoot, you see it all the time, like everything he did for this team and everything he's done for this team and everything he did last year on the field, and then everything he's done in this community. You know, you keep those things in perspective, and that's why we wanted to do this in the beginning. So yeah, I made it pretty easy.
Sounds like the problem was just they wanted to pay him so badly.
I think we're trying too hard to pay him.
He was just too good of a guy, and we loved him so much. I don't know how we got to that part in the answer. But, yeah, I mean, Peters today, you heard it early on there, acknowledged there was a gigantic gap at the beginning. Mm-hmm. He didn't say it in those words, but I will. He made it clear we had a long ways to go. And some of the reports that are out there are that the team was sub $25 million a year when they started, which seems a little bit egregious, and that the player and the agent were upwards of $35 million plus, maybe over Justin Jefferson money, which seems extremely egregious. The team was closer than the player. But if that's the case and you're bridging over $10 million, well, it's no kidding. It took a long, long time if neither wanted to budge.
Without a doubt. And then you get to the, you know, using the clock, using the calendar sort of as your adversary, almost as another negotiator where, you know, hey, I don't know how to say it, but it's like you're in the room that's a certain size, and then every day it gets a little bit smaller. And eventually you're going to run out of room. And that's kind of where we were approaching, right? Where the fines could start, the acrimony could really ramp up. And you saw some of it. I mean, you saw a guy that didn't seem very happy in McLaurin. I mean, you know, the not going to the preseason game and the one he was at, just sort of, you know, sitting by himself in a hoodie and didn't seem real thrilled to kind of be a part of it at that stage. That room starts to get smaller and smaller. Use that to your advantage. And then, you know, ultimately it's burned a deal.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We will talk with Danny Cannell ahead of Texas and Ohio State, a noon game on Saturday and a huge weekend of college football. We'll do that next on the Fan.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.